Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on reality behind the news right after this. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. We've been taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if your plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps as a fool for a client. Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself must be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor of law at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about it. He said, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, and do so without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. And it's worse than that. He said most of the students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients that it is a cruel hoax. And that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. If you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our school courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. And then click onto the archives page. I thought we'd take a look at the news and look at the reality behind the news based upon the International Forecaster and some of the underground newsletters. There's a big story that's about to break, probably in 2011, certainly no later than 2012. Our government, as you probably are well aware, is bankrupt. And now there's a commission. The president authorized a commission headed by Erskine Bowles and Senator Alan Simpson, the former senator from Wyoming, to see if they couldn't figure out a way that we could balance the budget or cut the deficit. That's number one, cut the deficit and see if we couldn't put some kind of semblance of normality back into our economic system. The truth of the matter is that's now impossible. That ship has already sailed. But now that that ship has already sailed, it's kind of like sitting on the Titanic after it's run by the iceberg and you got this hole down the side. Nobody knows if the ship is going to sink or not, but it is. And the great ship America is going to sink. We just don't know how long we have left. Is it a year, 2 years, or 5 years? I don't know. I'm not sure that anybody else does. But when we look back at history and we see how this happened, say, in Brazil, Argentina, or Hungary, or China, and other countries, then we can see historically how these hyperinflations come into play and how these nations and city-states and empires collapse. We just saw it more recently in Argentina in 2002 and 3. They went through a collapse of their monetary system, and all the Argentinians are still living there in Argentina. You know, trying to put beans on the table. So looking ahead, you know, here in the United States at least, and even people in South Korea should start thinking the same, because when the American empire collapses, you people in South Korea are going to be at the mercy of China and the North Koreans. You know, make up your mind to it. You people in the Philippines and India and so on. When the nuclear umbrella that protects you Australians is finally taken away, like the Egyptian empire or the Babylonian empire or the Roman empire, then geopolitical lines and allegiances change. And they begin with economics. And the economics are getting to the point now of desperation. And so the United States Congress is now talking about a Hail Mary desperation pass that's going to affect all of you people out there who have retirement accounts, these Krog plans and 401ks and so on. And those are going to be wiped out and taken away from you. And the reason we can predict this safely is because that's what they did down in Brazil and Argentina. And if they do it in Brazil and Argentina when governments get desperate, well, then I could just about picture, you know, when the American government gets desperate enough, they'll do the same thing here. Now, when this happens, those of you that listen to me today will say, well, it's an emergency and I don't mind doing my part. you will actually defend the thieves that steal your money, steal your life saving. That'll be the natural result. You'll defend them. Because today you say, you're a lunatic fringe, and I don't believe a word you're saying. And I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right. I'm just here to report on an event that is building in the Congress and that historically has occurred in the past in other places, which would lead me to believe that it'll probably occur here. So you can take the information and do with it as you will. But here's the story. There isn't any question that those who control our government from behind the scenes are bound and determined to take over that $6 trillion in private pension plans. Whether they'll be successful remains to be seen. Now, the Department of Labor wants to force all IRAs and 401ks into the arms of a corporate fascist government that knows better what is good for you than you do. And you would exchange your hard-earned investments for a guaranteed government annuity that isn't worth the paper that it's written on. Now, we've been writing about this for more than a year now, but as usual, very few people are listening. People say the government won't do that. The government cannot do that. Government, boys and girls, can do anything that it wants to. Anything that they want to do, they can do, and they will do. Now, we have been writing about this for more than a year, but as usual, few people are listening. Small amounts would go into our bonds, government retirement bonds, and larger amounts would be managed by the appointed few. They would be J.P. Morgan, Chase, Goldman Sachs, and Citigroup, and this would give them total control of the stock and bond market. These investments would act as collateral for the government against which they would issue our bonds. Now, that shades of the 1930s German monopoly control of their markets. And that's what this is all about, as well as the control and subjugation of worldwide investments, a total hold on the control of all investments. Now, when this happens, and it's going to happen, make up your mind to that, we do not know, but this is what government bureaucrats are up to if they can get away with it. Very often, Argentina is testing ground for new fascist ideas. That is what their bankruptcy and default was in part about in the late 1990s and early 2000s. It was a trial run on default. Now, for the past 2 years, they have been in the process of discussing how to capture private pensions. Now, we cannot accurately predict the future. We're not prophets. But we do know the powers that be want your assets, and to ignore that fact is to be stupid. We have advised our subscribers to seriously consider removing their retirement from the clutches of the government. Don't forget, you will have to pay taxes on your contributions and gains sooner or later anyway. You have 3 months left this year to phase out, whether in part or in total. So the choice is yours. We're out of it in total. So there's story number one I want to bring to your attention, and that is that there's $6 trillion that Americans have in these retirement accounts. Your government's bankrupt and they're desperate for money. It's a very simple process. They simply come along, enact the legislation, and nationalize your account. Now, they're not going to take your account without giving you something in return. They're going to give you a government bond, kind of like Social Security, which is, you know, in your mind, guaranteed. Now, there's nothing about Social Security that is guaranteed. If you believe that, then you're mistaken. There's no guarantee with Social Security. And Halvering versus Nestor tells us that very plainly. Now, the end result of Social Security is that it is bankrupt, and it is going to cease to exist at some point in time. We don't know exactly when, but at some point in time. Those of you who are collecting right now are safe, and you know you're on it. Those of you that aren't collecting right now aren't going to. The money that you've paid in, for everybody that's out there listening to my voice right now, everybody that's paid in will never get out as much as you paid in. We've already passed that milepost. Social Security now doesn't have enough money coming in to pay out its benefits. So it's going to require another bailout, and both political parties are just terrified at the prospects of having to deal with it. So they've been ignoring it for years. Nobody wants to talk about it. George Bush brought the subject up, and he was shot down in short order, so he shut up, and that was the end of that argument dealing with Social Security. And I'm not sure that his plan had any real merit. I just want to bring to your attention the fact that he brought it up. Now, the other day, I noticed the commission that the president's set up came back with an early report, and they said that there's terrible trouble coming up, and we need to cut spending, and we need to do these things, and we got to get right after it. The earliest that anybody's going to get after it will be 2012. And that's the earliest. That's an election year here. It ain't going to happen in 2012. But that's the earliest that it could come up for review. Meanwhile, our government is spending us into debt at the rate of more than $1 trillion a year. That's totally unsustainable, and we don't know how long it's unsustainable. Is it 6 months unsustainable, a year unsustainable, two, three, five? I'm not a prophet, and I don't know, and Bob Chapman isn't claiming to know. But sitting here now at the end of 2010, we want to make a report and tell you that if you think you're going to retire and buy a Winnebago and travel around America in your golden years on your 401k, you can put that out of your mind. That isn't going to happen. The most likely thing that's going to happen is that the government's going to take your dollars today, which are worth 100 cents, and pay you back tomorrow dollars that are worth 50 cents, which means that you'll only lose half. As time progresses along, and I've got a report here on hyperinflation, as the hyperinflation takes over, ultimately your purchasing power will go to zero. And then once you've been totally wiped out, then we can start over again. Now, there's a story that came out of Germany. A fellow bought back in 1904, 1903, something like that. He bought a life insurance policy for 10,000 marks. He paid his premium. And then when he went to cash it in 1924, 20 years later, he got paid 4 or 5 loaves of bread. I forgot exactly how much it was, but his 10,000 marks were worth 4 or 5 loaves of bread when he cashed it in. Now, those marks never were worth as much as a dollar, but in 1904, when he bought that 10,000 mark plan, it was worth 5,000 American dollars. Now, 5,000 American dollars in 1904, multiply that by at least 10 in purchasing power today, and you'd have $50,000. So this guy had a pretty sizable plan, and it was wiped out. I imagine that guy felt pretty sick, you know, after having paid all of those payments for all of those years, you know, and then you're expecting to get a payday, and then when the payday comes, you get wiped out. So that's what's coming with hyperinflation, so make up your mind to it. And Ben Bernanke was just on the 60 Minutes the other night, and he came out with more smoke and mirrors, and he said everything's under control. Just be patient, and everything's going to work out, and don't get excited. I'm not excited. I'm out of the stock market, and I'm out of the dollar, and I'm sitting here waiting for the shoe to drop. And Ben Bernanke is trying to restore confidence, you know, in everybody out there, and he wants us to be confident. Here's one more little story that I want to tell you as it relates to confidence. There's an organization here that's reported on every once in a while in the International Forecaster. I don't remember the name of it now. It may be shadowstats.com. It may be Shadowstats. But anyway, they report every once in a while about what the corporate CEOs are doing with their stocks. Now, here in the United States, there's about 10,000 public companies that are traded on the stock exchanges, 10,000 of those. And all of those 10,000 public corporations have what we call a CEO, and that's called your chief executive officer. Then each one of those companies has what they call a CFO. That's a chief financial officer. And then these CEOs and CFOs and then boards of directors and others are the insiders in those corporations. In other words, the chief financial officer, he's watching all of the money come in and all the money go out. He reports to the CFO, the CEO rather, the chief executive officer. And then the board of directors gets in on it. They get a report. And so let's take a hypothetical here. Let's suppose you're the CEO of General Electric. And because you're the chief honcho here and you're reporting to the board of directors, and the CFO comes in, he says, okay, well, based upon sales that we see and projections that we're making, we think next year in 2011 sales are going to go down 10 or 15%. And that inflation is going to be at this and that level, and as a result of that, we think that the stock price of General Electric stock is going to decline by 10, 15, 20, or 30%. Now, you're the CEO, see? And because you're the CEO and you just got this report that the stock at General Electric is going to go down 10 or 20 or 30%, you don't know how much exactly, but you're expecting it to go down. Now, you have $1 million, $2 million, $5 million worth of General Electric stock. Would you keep the stock? Would you buy more stock? Or would you sell the stock that you've got? And that's the question. And this company, whether it's Shadowstats or somebody else, reports on that. And the report that they're giving us now is that about 90-some percent, so over 90% of the CEOs and the insiders in corporate America are selling their stock. Now, what does that tell you? You know, I'm just a Joe Sixpack like you, and I'm sitting here and I'm reading a report, and it says 90% plus of the CFOs, CEOs, and members of the boards of directors in corporate America's 10,000 publicly owned corporations, those that are bought, sold, and traded on the Dow Jones Industrial Averages and the Russell Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ and so on, are selling their stocks. They're net sellers. So what does that tell you? Well, as a Joe Sixpack, it says to me, if the CEO of General Electric is selling his General Electric stock, it must be because he expects the price or value of the stock to go down. Because if I expected the price of the stock to go down, I would sell it. I'm looking for the bigger fool theory. I'm going to sell it to somebody else and let him take the loss, and I'll take my money right now. Now, you can take that as you want. There's nothing to me one way or the other. I don't have any stocks, and so I'm not faced with losing it. I've got a brother-in-law over here, and he's a nice guy. No, Terry, he's a great guy. He made a lot of money in the stock market in the 1990s. And in those years, he was saying to me, and the wife and everybody else that would listen. He says, now, you want to invest in stocks because stocks are where the money's at. And boy, this is really great. So he was in tech stocks. He was a computer man, and so he was in the technical stock. My God, and every time I got a report from Terry, it was, I can't make money fast enough. I don't know where to put all the money that I'm making. I'm just making money hand over fist. And this NASDAQ went up to 5,000. Do you remember that? 1997, 98, 99, 2000. And then in 2000, March of 2000, the stock markets reached their pinnacle. And if you were listening to the law school and the law hour and so on back in the 1990s, I was telling my students, get out of the stock market and buy silver and gold. It's a historic low. Gold hit $257 an ounce back in the 1990s, 1997, 8, 9, long in there. And silver was down. I can remember paying $5 an ounce for silver here at the law school. Students would come in, if you pay me in silver, I'll give you $5 an ounce. And when silver was selling for $450, and my students, they loved me. They thought, this guy Gordon's really stupid. Why, he's taking silver at $5 an ounce, and it's only selling in the marketplace for $450 less commission. Well, I still have that silver today, and last night it was selling for $29. I didn't do any of you people any favor by giving you an extra 4 bits for the silver back in 1999. I wasn't screwing you. I was paying you a premium. You know, but I wanted to point out to you that stocks and bonds reached their peak in the end of the 90s. And while they were good, I'm not telling you that stocks were bad in 1995, but they reached their peak. And you know, when they reached their peak, it's time to sell. And so Terry didn't sell. He hung on to them. So he wrote it from the bottom to the top, and then he wrote it back down to the bottom. So by 2003, the NASDAQ had dropped to about, I don't know, 12, 13, 1400, something like that, from 5,000 to 1,000, around numbers. The Dow Jones went from 14,000 to 6,000, and some change, 6,500. And Americans took a haircut for about $7 trillion. So if you had money in stocks in 1999, 2000, 1, 2, 3, you took it in the shorts, you lost $7 trillion. And then Terry said, well, I'm going to stay in the market to recoup my losses. Well, that might have made some sense, because in 1930, when this happened, the stock market bounced back 60%. And sure enough, the stock market bounced back 60%. In fact, right now, it's up to 11,500, or, you know, thereabouts, 11,000 and change. And now's the time to sell and get the hell out, because it's not going to 14,000. You're not going to get back what you lost. And over the last 10 or 12 years, the dollar's purchasing power has lost 50%. So Terry really didn't get anything back, but he... In nominal dollars, you know, he's gotten some of it back. And so he's hanging on to it. Okay, well, now, this next time around, when it collapses, it'll go down to 11%. That's what happened in 1929 to 1933. It takes 3.5 years, historically, 3.5 years, for these economies to collapse. So from October of 1929 to March of 1933, now to go take a look at stock prices in 1933, and after March of 1933, and you find that now their purchasing power, now their value is 11% of what it was in October of 1929. So from 29, it lost something on the order of 75%, 50 to 75% of its value. I've forgotten exactly where it was. And then it came up 60%. And then it collapsed in 1933 and went down to the total loss was 89%. So you lost everything in the first recession. That was in 2000. And then it came back up 60%, and now you're about to drop down to an 89% loss. And this is why the international forecaster is so good. And I just wanted to give you this report. Your 401k is going to be seized, and you make up your mind to that. And so you can either keep it, and then you'll get government bonds, and then you'll be ripped off, or you can get rid of it today and convert that into something else, you know, like food, clothing, and shelter, which we'll be coming up to as we progress along here. Number two. The illegal alien who says he's president of the United States will be at the UN summit in the coming week to push for global taxation so the Americans can get closer to the poverty line. The catchwords here are innovative financing mechanisms. I'll underline them. I like the way these government officials, they come up with quantitative easing. That means we're going to inflate the currency. And this buzzword here is called innovative financial mechanisms to achieve millennium development goals. And revenue is already being collected by some nations as a tax on airline tickets. Another proposed tax would be laid upon all international currency transactions. And the collection goal is trillions of dollars a year in the form of redistribution of wealth to bureaucrats and the poor. This is an extension of the Global Poverty Act, sponsored by the president when he was in the Senate. The bill was defeated. Now, the latest monstrosity coming out of the Senate is called the Livable Communities Act, SB 1619, which is being fast-tracked. And all of these one-world accretions should be thrown out of office. it would move people into urban areas so that they can be better controlled. This is another beauty from Christopher Dodd, who is leaving the Senate. He has been more corrupt than his father was, and he would force federal sustainable development zoning and control of local communities and, of course, create a whole new bureaucracy. The hook here is the federal government will provide grants to force people into the zoo that passes for city living today. Just another nightmare for Americans. Now, with that in mind, I've been recommending to my students for many years that they get out of the cities and then go back to the country. And that's because famine is coming here. Famine. And when I say that, sometimes people laugh at me a lot, but let me give you my authority here. It's a fellow by the name of Ezekiel. Yep, and you're right about that. It's in the Bible. It's in Ezekiel chapter 14, verse 14. So if you've got a Bible there, if you've got a pen and paper, remember, write this down. Here's what God says about this famine. He says, "The word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, the Son of Man, when the land sinneth against me by trespassing grievously, then will I stretch out my hand upon it, and I'll break the staff of the bread thereof, and I will send famine upon it, and I will cut off man and beast from it. And though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in that land, they should deliver but their own souls by their righteousness, says the Eternal. Yet, behold, therein shall be left a remnant that shall be brought forth, both sons and daughters. Behold, they shall come forth unto you, and you shall see their way and their doings, and you shall be comforted concerning the evil that I have brought upon Jerusalem, even concerning all that I have brought upon it. And they shall comfort you when you see their ways and their doings, and you shall know that I have not done this without cause, all that I have done in it, saith the Eternal." Now that's Ezekiel 14:14, and then Ezekiel 14:22 and 23. And so there's a number of these prophecies, prophetic utterances. This book of Ezekiel is written to the United States of America. It's written to Israel. And this word Jerusalem is a buzzword. It's a code word. The Bible, if you'll remember, I've mentioned this a time or two, is written in code. And when you code plead it, it's a legal term, the law is written in code. It's not written for the average Joe Sixpack out here on the street. It's written for the insiders, the lawyers and judges, politicians. Written for those that know and understand the code. And then when you learn how to code plead, then you can read in, you can see here, well, my God, here's what's coming down. Now, this famine is pretty straightforward. I mean, you don't have to figure this out. And he says, it's in the land that sins grievously. Have you been paying attention to what's going on here in the United States of America as it relates to sodomy? A capital felony. Sodomy is a capital felony. And they're legalizing it just as fast as they can around the nation. It's an occult practice. It's a practice of witchcraft, witches and witchcraft, and it's an occult practice, which is condemned and prohibited in the scripture in 16 forms. 16 forms of witchcraft, all prohibited in the scripture. And they're just as plain and just sticking right out here in your face here in the United States of America. So when I see the Congress working here on policies designed to move people off the land and into the cities, that, boys and girls, is the ninth plank to the Communist Manifesto. And they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. If you take a look at the history of America in 1922, about 44% of Americans were living on the land and 56% of Americans were living in the cities. Go back a little bit further, back to the 1860s, and it was about 66-33. About 66% of the people were living on the land, and 33% of the people were living in the cities. Go back a little bit further to colonial times, and about 90% of the people were living on the land, and about 10% of the people were living in the cities. Now take a look at the United States today, and 97% of us are now urban, and only 3% of us live on the land. So we've gone from 10% living in the cities to 97%. I would say that's a pretty significant change. We've gone from 90% of people living on the land to 3%. Very, very significant. Now, people that live on the land at least have the capacity to provide or to produce for themselves. Now, you people living across the street from Central Park in downtown Manhattan, in your condominium, do you have any idea how you're going to produce your food? I just thought I'd throw that out there for your consideration. Now, you people in Kansas that are living in small town America, or living out in the countryside on 3 or 5 acres or something like that, do you see how that's of advantage to you and how you might be able to plant a few seeds in the ground? And you're close enough to some neighbors that you might be able to buy a cow once in a while. So here's the Congress of the United States and Senate Bill 1619, which is seeking to implement further. They're not satisfied with 97% of you being locked up in the cities. I guess they're shooting to get 100% of you locked up in the city. So the 3% of you that are still out here in the countryside, be thinking about, do I really want to move to the city? And of you people that are in the city, do you really want to stay there? Hey, we're at the halfway point. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're taking a look here at reality behind the news. This is what's going on that isn't being reported to you. You won't get this from Brian Williams or Katie Couric, but you can get it from the International Forecaster, which is what I'm citing these stories from. And you can get this from theinternationalforecaster.com. And their website is www.intforecaster.com. And if you'd like to correspond with Bob Chapman, you can get him at bob@intforecaster.com. And if you would like to subscribe, you go to info@intforecaster. I always recommend the International Forecaster number 1, in case you were wondering where I rate it. And I have 4 that I subscribe to regularly, and there's probably 100 newsletters out there, and I'm not running any of them down. I'm just telling you that I can't subscribe to 100. Couldn't even report on that many, but I can report on 3 or 4, and I do. Now, there was a report that I've reported on here over the years a number of times called the Figge Report. And the Figge is a manufacturing company up in Ohio. And Mr. Figge became a multimillionaire working here in America. And so he, like a lot of people that make a lot of money, he's very grateful for the American experience and the American opportunity. And so he, along with a fellow by the name of Grace, were put on a commission by President Reagan back in the 1980s, kind of similar to what we were talking about here earlier, about President Obama appointed this commission to look into the fiscal deficits that are going on. It's called the Deficit Reduction Committee here, this new one, headed by Erskine Bowles and Senator Alan Simpson. Well, the Grace Commission was what President Reagan commissioned back in the 1980s. If you'll remember, we were coming off of the 1970s inflation at 21%. And the stock market had collapsed. It was down around 1,000, and times were tough. We were coming out of a recession. And so the Grace Commission came back and said, we can balance the budget, and we can save all this money, and we can save America, and here's the way we do it. And Figge was a part of that report. And so he put out a report. Now, what happened in reality, though, during the Reagan years from 1980 to 1988, instead of adopting those austerity programs and living within our budget and so on, the Congress would tax us, and they would take in a dollar. And then they would go out and spend $1.67, or they'd go out and spend $1.16 or $1.32, you see. And then, of course, the shortfall, they simply sold bonds and built up the national debt. And so if you'll take a look, President Reagan took over when the national debt was below $1 trillion, and when he left, it was a little over $1 trillion. And then as time went on between President Reagan and 1980, I'll just count forward here 30 years, 1990, 2000, 2010, we're now pushing, I think it, we're either pushing 14 or 15 trillion. I kind of forget if it's 13.7 or 14.7. I mean, we're adding debt so fast today, I can't keep up with it. Now, this spells in the final analysis, when individuals do this, it spells bankruptcy. When countries, nations do this, it spells bankruptcy also, but it's worse than that. Oh my God, it's way worse than that. And there's political repercussions, and wars are the ultimate result of it. Now, the next war will be World War III, and this next war, the Armageddon War, as the insiders call it. The Bible also calls it the Armageddon War, but in different ways, different terms. These economic collapses that occur to nations and city-states and empires and so on degenerates into what we call hyperinflation. And there's a story here about it. So let me give you this hyperinflation report here from the International Forecaster of 2010, keeping in mind that the Figge report predicted that by the year 2000 we would be in hyperinflation. Now, some of those recommendations made by the Grace Commission were in fact put into effect. And as a result of that, it strung it out 10 years. And so now, instead of this being past tense, having occurred 10 years ago, it is now future tense. It's on the horizon coming in the next 2 or 3 years. So Erskine Bowles, a Democrat now, he was on TV the other night, practically in tears. I mean, the guy was clearly emotional. And then he said, please, he was appealing to the Congress, said, please, take this seriously. This is critical to our nation's future. The next day, Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid said that these proposals are dead on arrival. So when you get to the point where you're financially strapped and you need to take action, this is where we were in the 1980s. Nobody wants to do that. So we didn't. We continued on. Then we got into a financial position where we were on the verge of going broke, and President Bush started two wars to stimulate the economy. That worked, kept us going for another 10 years. But now we're to the point where the two wars won't stimulate the economy enough. And the deficit spending that's being created here by the government isn't doing it either. That's quantitative easing one, and now we're going into quantitative easing two. And then Ben Bernanke the other night said he wouldn't rule out quantitative easing number three. And the numbers that are involved here are really gigantic. It's $5 trillion between now and then 2012. They're going to add another $5 trillion. They're just going to create it. They're going to print it up. They don't print it anymore. They just make computer entries now. Now, when this happens, it's going to dilute all the dollars that are out there in circulation. It's going to promote a thing called hyperinflation. There's a story on hyperinflation. The Fed continues to accumulate treasuries in numbers far greater than what the Treasury needs. Now, we have cited this previously. Like, bigger numbers will start showing up in the first half of 2011. Purchases will exceed statutory limits, and that means a repetition of excess Treasury creation in order to accommodate the economy's need for liquidity. And in addition, the Fed might have to buy up almost the whole Treasury float. Now, if that happens, the two-year T-note might not just drop to 2%, but to 1%. Now, that means mortgages, then, would fall to 3%, or maybe 3.375%. And then if this happens, then it would probably rule out QE3 and would set up a monetary collapse within the next 2 years, accompanied by hyperinflation. Now, monetary collapse is what we saw occur down in Argentina, you know, a few years back, and then they went into depression, and they had 62% unemployment. That's where it peaked out. And, you know, that's not good, but that's what's coming. So for you people that are unemployed, if you think you're going back to work, I think you can forget that. And for you people that are working now, if you think you're going to continue on working, I think you can pretty much forget that. Now, my wife and I had a decision to make here a few years ago, should we retire? And our conclusion was, no, we should not retire. And so we didn't. We didn't retire. We just kept right on working. And that's because there isn't any retirement on the horizon, and you people that are retired are coming out of retirement. You're going to go back to work or starve to death, one or the other. I see old people now going back to work, you know, in Walmart, greeting at the door as I walk in the door. You know, there's some old guy, 70 years old, greeting people at the door. You know, he had to come out of retirement. Now, I don't say this because I'm hoping for it to happen. I'm just telling you that this is historically what's happened in the past, and here's what's coming in the future. And Ben Bernanke promised it to us. Ben promised it. This is the guy we call Helicopter Ben. He said, we'll drop money out of helicopters if that's what's necessary. They're not going to drop money out of helicopters. That isn't the way they do that. They're going to print more and more of it and give it to the banks. Then the banks are supposed to lend that to us and take whatever little collateral we have left to impoverish us further. And that's the plan. That's the way it works. So you might want to consider now making a radical change. We might have a year or 2 years left before total collapse and hyperinflation comes. But that's what's coming. That's what's in the offing. And there isn't anything going to change that now. This ship is going to sink. And how do we know that? It's already got a 300-foot hole down the side of it. It's going to sink. What none of us knows is when. I don't think anybody could say it's 1 year, 2 years, or 5 years, but there's no doubt now as to what the ultimate outcome is going to be. Back in the 1980s, we had a choice to make, and we made it. I think it was the wrong choice. But, you know, that's what Americans wanted, and that's what they get. I think that in this latest round, I think we made the wrong choice in this quantitative easing, but, you know, that's what Americans wanted, and so they wanted a change, and so they voted in this guy, Barack Obama, and said, okay, now here's what you've got. I'm not opposed to Barack. Yeah, nice guy, I'm sure. But, you know, we tried this back in the 1930s. It didn't work. Keynesian economics did not work in the 1930s, despite what you heard and what you were told in school. The unemployment rate in 1941 was 16%. Now, it's true it was less in 1941 than it was in 1935, which was at 25%. Well, I think that when you have an unemployment rate at 16%, I think that's economic depression. The thing that got us out of the Depression was World War II. Now, the thing that will get us out of the next Depression will be World War III. Now, that's going to be a bloody affair. That's going to kill a bunch of people. In fact, the scripture tells us it's going to kill about 90% of the people on the planet. Well, not all of them by the war, but the resulting famines and disease epidemics that go along with the war is going to do that. So if this happens, and it'll probably rule out QE3, remember that inflation is different than hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is when dollar holders, that's you, which in this case are all of us, when we lose faith in that currency as a medium of exchange, people will try to get out of the dollar and sometimes into other currencies. So you'll try to change your dollars into Mexican pesos or Swiss francs or Canadian dollars or something else, or into gold or silver, or into anything but dollars. Now this is what happens with hyperinflation. See the words "or into anything." When your dollars are inflating very rapidly, then you won't want to save them. Right, let's think about it. If you took your paycheck home and it was $1,000 today, and you knew because of the rise in prices last month, say we're 10% a month, and that next month you will only get $900 worth of purchasing power out of your $1,000, would you keep that $1,000 and spend it next month, or would you rush out today and spend that $1,000 on whatever you could get? That's where we're headed, and Helicopter Ben promised it to us. And the policies that we're following are the same policies that the people in Brazil, Bolivia, Argentina, all these Latin American countries have been following over the last 100 years. And we see the results, and it was reported by Figge back in the 1980s. And in fact, those people in Latin America, when Figge went down there and was interviewing them, said, "You Americans are on the same road that we were on that led us to hyperinflation. Why are you Americans doing that?" This is back in the 1980s, under Reagan, the conservative, remember? Now you're under Barack Obama, the liberal, the socialist, the communist. Now, what do you think they're going to do? And how is that going to impact upon you and your family? Okay. So that'll be followed by a descent into deflation, a deflationary depression. So if we have to guess that it's going to take 2 to 3 years, these policies are the same old Keynesian fascist nostrums used in the 1930s, which never took us out of the Depression. It took a war to do that, and which worked at great price over the last 60 years. So like in the 1930s, it won't work this time around either. It's never worked in the past. Why would we think it's going to work in the future? The Fed has been forced to undermine treasuries in order to gain time, and it won't work. Confidence has already been lost. Why do you think money is pouring into gold and silver? As they hit new highs, this is how Rube Goldberg would fix a monetary system with spit and baling wire. When hyperinflation comes, it'll be like a thunderbolt out of the blue. I'm going to underline that. Hyperinflation, when it comes, isn't going to come slowly over years. It comes like it did in Brazil in 5 days. 5 days. That's what it took. So I can't tell you that it's going to come in 5 days, but it might be 5 months. 5 months. 5 weeks. 5 days. When it comes, it's going to come like a thunderbolt. And then you will want to trade your dollars. Then you'll have your government bonds in place of your 401k. You'll be locked up in the city in your condominium across from Central Park. Now, the Chinese, remember, produce 99% of our shoes, well, them and the other foreigners, and 50% of our food comes from overseas, and about 67% of our petroleum comes from overseas. And those countries, when our dollar collapses and it's worth nothing, do you think they're going to take our dollars for oil, shoes, and food? I mean, come on, guys, it's time to wake up and smell a coffee here. Reality is coming. This is the reality behind the news. Now, it takes a long time. It doesn't occur, you know, in a week or 10 days, and then it's something behind you. This is an event that has been unfolding since October the 15th, 1971, when President Nixon took us off of gold. He said, we're not gonna use gold as the arbiter of monetary influence. What we're going to do is we're gonna keep our gold, and we're not going to pay it out anymore. We're not going to pay our bills with gold. Okay. So now all of the nations of the world have gone to fiat currencies, and there's no discipline in fiat currency. And so we've just spent ourselves into debt. Until here we are today, and here's where we're located, and here's where we're headed. And our corporate chiefs now are selling their stocks just as fast as they can get rid of them. That tells me that you and I should be selling our stocks just as fast as we can get rid of them. Now, over the last 3 or 4 months, I've watched the price of silver go from $17 an ounce about 3 months ago to $29 an ounce last night. Hey, listen, don't you think that you'd be better off with silver than stocks and bonds? Price of gold a year ago, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it was around $1,200. I saw it was $1,400 the other night. That's up $200. Gold and silver, boys and girls, have been the trading medium for mankind from the Garden of Eden to today. And paper money came into being in the Western world when Marco Polo came back from China. And he said, look at this new innovation, look at this invention. It's called paper money. And this paper money now has proliferated in the West, and we've been through depressions and collapses. And so what's going on around us today is anything new. We did this in 1783 and 1929. McClellan, 1876. We've been through this before, and we're going to go through it again. So I thought I would report the reality behind the news so that you could prepare for that. Now, the Fed will most likely end up with all of these treasuries and be neutralized in its efforts to assist the Treasury's Working Group on Financial Markets, also known as the Plunge Protection Team, which now controls our markets. Hell, they're in total control. Well, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder. We'll take this up, reality behind the news, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's a signal, says our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So, until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.